Today's guest, Abraham Rybakov, Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, Jack Bell of the Associated Press, Marianne Means of the Hearst Newspapers, and Robert McCormick of NBC News. Ned Brooks is our moderator.
Our guest today is the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, Mr. Abraham Rybakov. He is heading the fight for the administration's health care program for the aged. And now here is the first question from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Secretary, the reports around Capitol Hill are that the King Anderson bill, the president's program of medical care under Social Security, is dead for this session. Do you think that that's true?
No, it isn't dead. It is in difficulty in the Ways and Means Committee, but I really think that we have an opportunity to come out with a favorable report.
Well, are you ready for compromises in order to get it out of the Ways and Means Committee?
Not so much as a compromise as alternatives, Mr. Spivak. There are a number of alternatives that, in my opinion, could be very beneficial to the bill. This is a 67-page bill, and there are certain changes that could be made.
Well, are they important alternatives? Like what?
Well, some of the alternatives that are being discussed is to bring in the some 3 million people who are not presently covered. The problem of automatically taking the hospitals that are accredited by the Joint Committee on Accreditation and making them eligible under the bill. There has been some talk of a possibility of allowing Blue Cross to administer some of the details of the program.
Would you be in favor of having the Blue Cross participate in the administration of the program?
I would say this, that this alternative, if this would alternative would mean the acceptance of a majority vote in the Ways and Means Committee, I would be willing to accept it, yes, sir.
A suggestion has been made of giving people an option of accepting cash to purchase private health insurance. Would you be willing to compromise on that?
This alternative would be acceptable, provided we were assured that in so doing, that it would be a proper policy, it would be a good policy that would give the coverage, and not to place the Social Security Fund in position of taking all the bad risks and all the good risks going into an alternative program. But I do believe that this could be worked out satisfactorily.
Well, just how would that work, Mr. Secretary? Would you still have the employer and the employee pay under Social Security?
Sir.
This would be a compulsory plan.
Yes, it
and
would,
then,
Mrs. Spivak.
At the end of a period of time, each individual, if he wanted to have a private company insure him, he would be given a flat sum to buy that insurance?
No, you see, the Social Security benefits would be the equivalent of a certain amount of cash, which would represent what the value would be of the insured program. Now, we would give an alternative. You could give an alternative to the individual each year to have an option of coming in and saying, I will accept the cash equivalent, and with this cash equivalent, have another type of policy. This could be worked out, but you would need a number of safeguards to make sure that the individual covered would have the proper protection, and also to make sure that the fund would not be depleted or have an adverse selection.
Why should he be made to pay the government each week a sum from his salary in the employer and then give it back to him? Isn't that, aren't you simply getting into a great deal of administration, useless administration costs?
No, you are not at all, because this is being done at the present time under the Social Security system. Every employee covered has deducted from his pay and an equivalent sum being matched by his employer to go into this fund. This is the only way that you can assure the proper administration and proper coverage. Any other system would be very expensive and very difficult, because basically we want to insure all our aged people under this particular plan.
And you will not compromise on the Social Security aspect.
That is right, because that goes to the very heart of the program. Without the Social Security approach, you don't have a program, Mr.
Speaker. Have you had any evidence from the Ways and Means Committee that they're willing to accept the mild compromises you're ready to make and to accept you under Social Security?
No, I would say this. There have been a number of conversations with individual members, but there has not been a joint conversation with the entire committee. We are in committee, and we resume again on Monday, but there have not been assurances from a majority of the committee at this time.
You still think there's a chance of getting your bill out of the Ways and Means
Committee? I
certainly do. We'll continue the questions with Mr. Bell.
Mr. Secretary, the first member of the cabinet of the Kennedy administration who quit went down to Texas and got himself nominated for governor by turning against the New Frontiers program. Is anything of that nature likely to happen in Connecticut if you get the Senate nomination there?
Not at all. I think the president's program is a great program. And frankly, one of the reasons that I would like to be a senator, to be able to have a vote for the president's program in addition to a voice.
Well, we know how you stand on Medicare. How do you stand on this issue of aid to education as far as aid to parochial schools is concerned? Now, at least five educational organizations already are protesting against including direct grants to such schools in the higher education bill, which is now in conference committee. What is your view of direct federal grants to parochial schools?
I would say this, Mr. Bell. I think those organizations are wrong. There is nothing unconstitutional in grants to higher education. To me, it seems that the time has come to eliminate the bitterness that has developed in this fight on all educational programs. If we don't eliminate this bitterness, we will never have an educational program in America, and I do believe that education is vital for the future of our nation. Education is power.
Well, do you agree with the president? And I think he has stated this rather decisively. It is unconstitutional to give aid to secondary parochial schools, direct grants to them?
Well, I would say that across-the-board grants, the president has said, is unconstitutional.
He has said, as I believe that you just pointed out, that higher education comes in a different category, and, of course, these are hedged in, these grants. But I'm trying to get at the fundamental belief that you have of whether it's constitutional to provide for the education of children in secondary parochial schools.
Well, let me say this. I think there are things that can be done that are constitutional. And I would mention them to you. Higher education, I think, is constitutional. Special purposes, grants, and loans for the purpose of science, education, math, and foreign languages is constitutional. In my opinion, auxiliary services that go to the child, such as health services, school lunches, bus transportation, school books, are constitutional. And there is another method that can be used that hasn't been talked about too much that I think is constitutional, and that is the use of tax credits and tax deductions. And I would advocate this method to be used as an alternative to give to all the children and their parents an equal opportunity and an opportunity for children going to private schools. There are some 6.5 million youngsters going to elementary and secondary private schools. They are not all Catholic, Mr. Bell. Out of the 6.5 million, 1,200,000 of these go to non-Catholic schools. Let me give you an example of how
I didn't
this
say they were all Catholic, Mr. Yeah. Secretary. I regard a parochial school as a private school
right.
In that sense, and I think that's the accepted sense of it.
And I would treat all students going to private schools the same way. Now, let me show you how the tax credit could work out. Let us assume that there was voted across the board grants to pupils of $20 per pupil. I think under these circumstances, it would be fair to give the parents of the child who go to a private school a tax credit of $20. Because in the final analysis, these parents are making a great contribution to all education, those in public school as well as private school. And I do think that in an element of justice, they should be entitled to a tax credit. And this is a method that I think, with the other three that I outlined, together with the possibility of the use of a shared time approach that could take us out of this great bind, that could take us out of this bitterness, and come up with a new discussion, Mr. Bell, on this all-important subject. These five elements could be the basis for a new discussion and a new dialogue in America in the entire field of education.
Well, isn't the tax cut program what you're advocating almost exactly the same thing that Senator Barry Goldwater has advocated?
I don't know. I don't know.
He has advocated a tax reduction to make up for local school taxes, which would amount to the same thing.
Well, I don't know whether Senator Goldwater advocated or not, but I would say that we should explore the tax credit and tax deduction feature in order to take care of this great problem, because what we must be interested in America is a good education of every child, whether that child goes to a public school or that child goes to a private school.
Miss Means.
Mr. Secretary, back to Medicare. Philosophically, this represents a new area in which government is going to be involved in the lives of individuals. Don't you think that the doctors have some justification in being concerned with this trend?
No, I don't agree with you, Miss Means, because it is not a new trend. The government is already in the field of medicine. In the so-called controversial Kerr-Mills bill, the government is in the field of medicine. The government is in the field of medicine in the Veterans Administration. The government is in the field of medicine in giving medical care for people on relief and old people on old age assistance. So the government today is very much in medicine. The government is in medicine under the Hill-Burton program with grants to hospitals. The government is in medicine in a fantastically large research program. So the United States government has been in medicine for a long time and very heavy, Miss Means.
Well, I think primarily the doctors were concerned with the government getting involved with their fees. And I know your Medicare program doesn't include this,
That's
but
right.
It does. In providing for hospital care, it says that the government will help pay for customary hospital services.
That's
What's
right.
to prevent the hospitals then from hiring doctors to do whatever might be called customary hospital services?
Well,
and they're then paying their fees that
well,
way.
Well, basically, at the present time, the bill provides for certain customary services such as x-rays and anesthesia. These are the type of services or the services that an intern or resident gives. Basically, the bill provides for hospital care and customary services. I don't think that the hospitals themselves will hire doctors to give the general care of people or give them treatment.
Well, Mr. Secretary, Governor Rockefeller agrees with you that the present Kerr-Mills bill is inadequate, but he favors a program introduced by Congressman Lindsey, Republican, which is also based on the Social Security payment principle, which is the one you said you wouldn't compromise. Is there any reason why your administration bill would be better than the Lindsey bill?
Well, the Lindsey bill has basic weaknesses, and no member of the Ways and Means Committee has introduced a bill like the Lindsey bill. I would say of all the Republicans' bills, the Lindsey bill is the best. And if we would take and make sure that there wouldn't be a concentration of all the good risks into the private insurance or the Blue Cross insurance alternative, I think we could work this out as an alternative. I think, Ms. Means, it should be understood, as far as the president is concerned, he isn't interested in who gets the credit. The president is interested in a bill. The president is interested in a bill and isn't interested in an issue. And that is why we are fighting so hard to try to get a bill through this session of Congress.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Secretary, Dr. Annis, as a spokesman for the American Medical Association, said on NBC on the 21st of May that money was appearing mysteriously from all kinds of strange government sources to finance propaganda for the president's medical care program. Well, where does the money come from? Well, one, are you propagandizing for the bill? And two, where does the money come from?
I would say the propagandizing that we try to do is on programs such as Meet the Press and Talking For It, to tell you the truth, and making speeches across the country. One of the duties of a member of the president's cabinet and those people part of the administration is to speak for the president's program in every field, which we do. Now, it is also customary to answer your mail and to provide material to those people who raise questions to members of Congress and the general public. But as far as the government is concerned, as a government, we are just answering the questions and doing our job such as every member of the cabinet and every administration does for its program down through each and every year.
Well, that brings me around to question number two. Do you think the American Medical Association's political activity in connection with the medical health program is ethical?
I would say this. Every group of American citizens have a right to make their point of view known. The AMA has just as much right to be against this bill as other groups of aged citizens have to be for the bill. I have my quarrels with the AMA. I think sometimes they misrepresent what the president's program really is. And during discussions, I try to point this out. But I have no objection to the AMA making the fight for against this bill, because this is a privilege granted to every American as an individual or as in a group.
Well, what happens to an organization like the AMA, which is listed as a professional organization, when it does get into politics so far as its tax status is concerned?
Well, I haven't checked that with the Treasury Department, and I don't intend to.
Why not?
Well, basically, if you're in a hard fight, I'm not here to cry foul. The AMA seems to be crying foul all the time, but we are in this fight for this bill, and this fight will be settled this session, or it will continue in the session to follow. And I am confident that ultimately this fight will be won. And I welcome the opposition to the AMA, because this is a chance for the AMA in opposition to us who are for this bill to discuss this measure, so the people of America will have a good understanding of the proposal.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Secretary, you're a lawyer. Do you personally think that a federal aid bill, which includes money for classrooms and for teacher salaries, is unconstitutional?
A federal aid? No, I think that it's... I think that such a bill...
For parochial schools, too.
For parochial schools. It would be, across the board, it would be unconstitutional. But if it were related to a special purpose of this nation, which has nothing to do with religion, such as in the field of math, such as in the field of science, such as in the field of languages, similar to the approach of the National Defense Education Act, under these circumstances, and for that purpose, I don't think it would be unconstitutional.
If you use the money to build a schoolroom, you couldn't designate it just for math.
Oh, yes, you could. There is no reason why you couldn't use these funds for specific purposes, for a math, for a building that would be used for math, science, and languages, and in which religion would not be taught of any course at all.
If a parochial school were given money to put up a building, you wouldn't insist that it just be used for one purpose.
If grants or loans were to be given for such purpose, it should be used for that purpose. Yes, sir.
Mr. Bell.
Well, Mr. Secretary, isn't that just splitting legalistic hairs to say that you can grant federal funds for a classroom in which mathematics will be taught, but you can't grant federal funds to a parochial school for a classroom in which something else might be taught?
No, Mr. Bell, because there's always a fine line in every law. And basically, we are engaged at the present time and have been for a long period of time in giving grants to medical schools, for giving grants for research.
Has that ever been tested in the Supreme Court?
Measures such as this have not been tested in the Supreme Court.
So we don't know whether it's constitutional or not.
That is right. But I think there are outward limits on which you cannot go, and that is for any measure that would have to do with the teaching of religion, I believe would be unconstitutional. I think both sides would agree would be unconstitutional. But there are some things that you can do, and I would try to confine it to the measures that can be done. And I think that I outlined to you before the measures that could be done constitutionally, and you'd have to confine it to the constitutional means.
Just a short question to clear up the political situation. If you're nominated for the Senate in Connecticut, you intend to run as a 100% Kennedy New Frontiersman, do you?
Well, I would say that I am part of this administration, and I will run on the Kennedy program. Yes, sir.
Maybe slightly less than 100%.
Well, I would say, as of the present time, everything that President Kennedy has advocated, I believe in, and I would run on President Kennedy's program.
Miss Means.
Running on President Kennedy's program, Mr. Secretary, how would you defend the charge that the administration is anti-business?
I would say that there is no basis to this at all. I think President Kennedy is a fair man. There is nothing by his actions that indicate that he is anti-business. I think that the president is basically a middle-of-the-roader, so as I am a middle-of-the-roader, and there is nothing about the president's background, there is nothing about the president's philosophy, and there's nothing about the president's program that can be considered anti-business. Some people would like to use this as political propaganda, but it just won't hold up. And I challenge those who make that accusation to prove it.
Well, you have no concern about the shape of the economy at the time?
I would say the shape of the American economy is good. The stock market has gone down. But the shape of the American economy and every other sector is good. Of course, the American economy could be better, and the president would like to make it better, as I would, and every other American would like to make it better. But I do consider that the present economy is good.
Mr. Secretary, I want to change the subject just a little bit. There's a bill in Congress now which is somewhat languishing, which is to provide federal employees, women, equal pay with men for equal work. And nobody seems very interested in this bill except a handful of women. Since it would certainly help the health and welfare of a lot of women, would you give it your support?
I sure would. I'm for that. As a matter of fact, in our department, we keep appointing women to top jobs all the time, and we treat them equally. And when a woman takes a job, she will get the same pay that a man would have received in the same job, Ms. Means.
We have about 2.5 minutes. Mr. McCormick.
Well, I'd like to ask just a very quick one, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Spivak. On this tax deduction in connection with the education bill, that would apply to the parents of students in parochial schools. Is that correct?
Parents of children in all private schools, be they parochial or otherwise.
Yeah, but I mean, it would not apply. I mean, this is not a new education program in which we'd give a tax allowance for.
No, it isn't a new educational program. It is what I consider a sense of fairness. And one of the means to get over this great hassle that has taken place. And I do believe that we could do this and do it constitutionally, and there is no constitutional restriction to give this tax credit and deduction to the parents of children who go to private schools.
Mr. Spivak.
How would the money get to the schools itself? You'd give it to the parents, and they would get the credit, but how would the parochial school get the money?
Well, basically, the parents are the ones who basically pay tuition in many private schools. And basically, tuition is not a matter that is given a tax credit or tax deduct at the present time. And by a series of credits or deductions, you can equalize a sense of fairness and be within constitutional means.
No, but they're getting that. They're paying that tuition now. If you gave them a $20 credit, do you think they would turn that over to the parochial school for buildings or for teachers' salaries?
That would be entirely up to the parents and their relation with the school.
I don't see how that would do the parochial schools any good.
Well, the parents are the ones who are basically supporting all private education, and to the extent you give them a sense of equalization, at least you leave the parents in a sense of wholeness, and they are not having their funds go for education in public schools and private schools at the same time. You are making a basis of equality between the parents who are sending their children to private schools and the public schools who really receive a federal grant.
Yeah,
so there's
a
balancing off.
The parent who got the $20 credit is likely to keep that credit, and the parochial school that has to pay extra money for its teachers or for buildings still would not get the money unless the federal government gave it to them.
Well, I would say no, the federal government wouldn't then give that $20 to the parochial school. If the private school wanted to raise the tuition to the parents of the of the children, I suppose they could do so, but that would be an arrangement between the private schools and the parents.
I still don't see how it helps the schools.
I'm sorry, at this point we're going to have to suspend our questions, and thank you very much, Secretary Ribicoff, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. We'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press discussion in just a moment.
the identification of Radio Israel, similar to our own trademark, the NBC Chimes. This is Edwin Newman in the NBC Newsroom in New York. Foreign radio stations are close to us because we are in constant contact with our correspondents around the world. The result? You get news direct from where it happens throughout the day on NBC Radio News on the Hour.
How much does a ham sandwich cost in your part of town? 65 cents? Well, if every day you put the price of that sandwich into Series E United States savings bonds, at the end of 7 years and 9 months, you'd have bonds worth around $2,000. And there's an easy way to do this kind of saving. Join the payroll savings plan. Just tell the bond officer where you work to deduct the money from your paycheck. You know, United States savings bonds have always been a good buy ever since they started 20 years ago. They helped send a lot of kids through college, bought a lot of houses, made retirement carefree for lots of folks. And this year, the 20th anniversary of the bond program, they're a better buy than ever. They pay off sooner, they pay more interest. So why not start a regular monthly savings bonds habit? You'll help yourself, and you'll help your country. Now, more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was Abraham Ribicoff, Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. And the panel consisted of Lauren C. Spivak, Jack Bell of the Associated Press, Marianne Means of the Hearst Newspapers, and Robert McCormick of NBC News. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press discussion, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at the same time. Next Sunday is the opening day of the American Medical Association's convention, and Meet the Press will have as its guest Dr. Edward R. Annis, official AMA spokesman. This program was pre-recorded. Say, did you know that forest fires are this nation's most shameful waste? Last year, more than 3 million acres of good timber and range went up in smoke. Think it over. This waste weakens America. Forest and range fires can be stopped because 9 out of 10 are man-made. Remember, only you can prevent forest fires. This is Monitor, going into its 8th year, traveling with you on NBC Radio.